are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Detroit basketball!
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. Per usual, I am your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter at Kuka Hill NBA. You can find me over at Detroit Bad Boys, writing articles about the Pistons. You can find me on YouTube at Kuz Ballroom. And today, man, today we got an amazing guest, Motor City Hoops on Twitter. Make sure you guys go follow him on there. His name is Bryce. Bryce, thank you for coming on here.
I appreciate it, Koo. I appreciate you having me, man. Like, I'm a listener. I maybe not every day, but I try to follow along. I like your takes. I follow you on Twitter. I like what you're doing on there. So I just appreciate that you're having me, giving me this chance to talk hoops.
Absolutely, man. So me and Bryce, I kind of connected with Bryce on Twitter because he does some great film breakdowns, and that's kind of like, you guys have, any of you guys who have been listening to the podcast know that that's like one of my favorite things. I love breaking down film and getting in depth with it. So we kind of connected on there. So we're going to definitely talk about some film and break down some stuff with Sekou and Killian Hayes later on in the show. But first, the first thing we're going to talk about here, I'm sure a lot of you guys who are very aware of who Zach Lowe is, you guys are probably very annoyed today. He released his first team all-rookie team. And you guys can go ahead and take a wild guess and say that he did not have Sadiq Bey or Isaiah Stewart on this first-team all-rookie team. He had LaMelo Ball, Tyrese Halliburton, Anthony Edwards, Desmond Bane, and Emmanuel Quickley. So before I give my thoughts on it, Bryce, just what do you think about it? Do you feel like that Sadiq Bey or Isaiah Stewart should have been on the first team? Are you that mad about it? Like, what's your take on it right now?
Absolutely cool. Like, I am frustrated, and I'll be honest, a lot of Pistons fans thought that Sadiq Bey and Isaiah Stewart were going to get on it, and I thought that was a little zealous. I thought that was a little much. I didn't think we were going to get two guys. I thought Sadiq Bey was a lock, to be honest with you. Like, I hadn't even thought about it. So when this came out, I was like, this is crazy. So I didn't think we were going to get two. I thought Bey would be first team, Stewart would be second team, and I just don't get it. I mean, the man shot the lights out. He scores the basketball. He played a ton of minutes. He started a bunch of games. I just don't see how you can justify not having him first team over Bane and Quickley. You know, Ball, Halliburton, Edwards, I understand those three, but you got to put him over Bane and Quickley.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. It's just like, I didn't think that they should have either. I mean, both Isaiah Stewart and Sadiq Bey. I agree with you. Like, expecting to have both of them on there is definitely a little too optimistic, but I don't see how Zach Lowe doesn't put Sadiq Bey on there. So obviously this isn't like the first team all rookie team solidified. This is just Zach Lowe's first team all rookie. But Zach Lowe, like, I'd expect more from him, if you want me to be honest. If it was like Max Kellerman or Stephen A. Smith or something like that, like I wanted, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But Zach Lowe, I expect more from Zach Lowe. And like, his reasoning I heard was these guys were on winning teams.
Yeah.
And man, if are we for real, like, using wins and like and winning records and team records for all rookie teams? Like, I can understand like all NBA teams, MVP, like stuff like that, but rookie teams, bro, like for the rookie teams, half the rookie, if you're a good rookie, you're likely on a bad team because exactly. A team at the top, yes, of the draft drafted you. So it doesn't make sense why you would ever include team record or anything like that for a rookie team. And Sadiq Bey has broken like so many records this year shooting wise. He's been the best shooter of the class. I think they said, I'm pretty sure he's second in scoring as a rookie. Like, it, I don't, he broke, like, didn't he break the all-time rookie record for most threes?
He broke the record for games with 5+. He would have broke, yes, the rookie record for threes made in your rookie season, but he didn't get 82 games. He ends up third on the list, but he only got 72 games. Here's the problem with Zach Lowe's rationale. And I read the article, and his rationale was Ball, Halliburton, and Edwards were locked. And then Quickley, Bane, Tate, and then our two guys were fighting for the last two spots. He thought they were all even, so he gave it to the two that played on winning teams. The problem with that is, Koo, like, our guys were better than those two guys. Like, there shouldn't have needed to be a tiebreaker. We'll leave Stewart out. Sadiq Bey was better than Desmond Bane and Quickley. So there didn't need to be a tiebreaker based on team wins. That's where I think his logic was flawed.
No, yeah, I it's just, like I said, I didn't expect Isaiah Stewart to make it first team. Like, I'm being realistic. I did not expect Isaiah Stewart to make it. But Sadiq, I thought was like, I for real thought Sadiq was a pure lock. I thought that almost everybody was just going to pencil in Sadiq, and he was just going to be automatically on one of those. So I don't know, man. Like I said, that's only Zach Lowe's first team all rookie. But the thing is that kind of has me worried is that I feel like Zach Lowe's like one of the smartest ones.
Yeah.
Who like has these votes and makes these teams, etc. So if like one of the smarter ones is not including Sadiq Bey, I definitely don't expect the dumber ones to care about Detroit teams. I don't know if Sadiq's gonna make it to the first team. I think he absolutely deserves it, but I mean, we can shift a little bit away from Sadiq. Does Isaiah Stewart? Do you think Isaiah Stewart has a legit case for first team all rookie, or do you think that would be a little too biased and optimistic as a Piston fan to think he could make it?
I don't know, man. Like, I keep going back and forth, and I'm out of all these rookies, Isaiah Stewart's by far my favorite Piston on this current squad. Like, I just love him. I love his energy, the way he plays, and then the skill level that he started to show, the development of his offensive game. Like, I just love Isaiah Stewart. And so I do think I'm biased, like even more than just being a Pistons fan and doing a podcast and all that stuff. I don't think he's probably deserving of first team. I could probably make a case if I really wanted to, that because that man plays both sides of the court. You know what I'm saying? Like, block shots, led rookies in blocks, led rookies in rebounds. So I think there's an argument, but I would be happy if Bay on the official one is first team and then Stewart makes second team. I could live with that.
Yeah, I also agree with you there. I think Isaiah Stewart has like a small case for it, but I don't know if he should. See, the thing, I understand Quickley making it to the first team. Like, Quickley, I understand making it to the sure. first team. If they want to put Quickley on there, go ahead. Desmond Bane is the one where I'm like, okay, like Sadiq Bey should be having Desmond Bane's spot. So if the rookie team was LaMelo Ball, Haliburton, Edwards, Bey, and Quickley, then like, while it would be cool to have Isaiah Stewart on there, you probably wouldn't hear much of an argument or much complaining from me because I feel like those guys probably deserve the first team. And I would have been completely fine with Isaiah Stewart getting the second team. Now, like you said, Isaiah Stewart really had a good season, way better season than I think anybody really expected from him. So, that like, second team's no, like slouch. It's not that you still had to play pretty good to make the second team. But I don't know if he really deserved it. Me being trying to be non-biased and be realistic, I just don't know if Isaiah Stewart really deserved it over. He definitely, I don't think, deserved it over LaMelo, Tyrese, and Edwards. I definitely don't think he was better than Sadiq. And if you had to keep it a buck, I don't think that he was better than Quick or deserves it more than Quickley. But that's just my opinion. I don't know if he really has like a legit case for first team, which is fine for me. But yeah,
I agree. Like, I mean, I think I don't know how it compares against other years with rookies' numbers, scoring, stuff like that. But I feel like these guys have put in good years. Like, as we're recording this, LaMelo Ball just got blown out in the play-in game. But like, he had a really good year. Haliburton played well. Anthony Edwards averaged almost 20 a game. Quickley, the Knicks are the 4 seed in the East. So, these guys had a really good year, especially with the rep coming in about this draft class. So you're right. The fact that we're saying Isaiah Stewart may have been the 6th guy or the 7th guy and be on second team, I don't think that's a knock on him whatsoever. Like, some of these rookies played really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this draft class has been much better than people thought. I think Isaiah Stewart obviously has been much better than people thought. There was a lot of negativity around his pick, and he's just completely shattered all expectations. And it's not even, like I said, it's not even just Isaiah Stewart. I think this whole draft class has played much better than people expected already. So that's one of those things where, like, when people say, oh, this is a weak draft class, don't expect much from them, I almost always tune it out. Because I don't, like, outside, what draft class was that, 2013 or 14? Outside of that one, when I forget which one it was, but it was 2013 or 14 that was just awful. Outside of that one, every time I hear people say it's a weak draft, it's almost never just weak.
Are you talking about the Anthony Bennett draft?
Yes.
Yeah. I believe that was 2013. Yeah. And the fact Anthony Bennett was a number one pick is just crazy, but I don't know, but yeah, outside of that one, usually there's guys that ends up being really good players in the NBA.
Yeah. So it is what it is. This draft class was really good. So just having them on the rookie team is telling good things about the Pistons selections, even though I think Sadiq Bey deserves first team all rookie. We'll see if he actually gets it. But like I said, we're going to break down Sekou and Killian Hayes, their season, try to go into some film that I know me and Bryce have both looked at. So we're going to talk about that. But before we get there, let me tell you about another one of our sponsors, Locker Room. Locker Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. This app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk with me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time about your favorite team and sport. Locker Room is the best place to engage in conversation and debate about whatever sports subject you're thinking about. Like I tell you guys, I'm always on there Monday, Thursday, and Saturday in my friend Duncan Smith's room. We talk about all kinds of things. We have some NBA trivia at the end. It gets real heated sometimes. Sometimes it's just a bunch of fun and laughing. You should really just go download. It's a lot of fun. You can even join me in that room whenever you guys want. Go download the free Locker Room app now. Currently available on all iOS devices, and I believe it's also on Android now. I saw we have a few people joining us now in Android in those rooms. So if you have Android, make sure you guys go look it up too. I believe you could get it. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the NBA group for the latest league updates. I know you'll find a ton of incredible rooms around your favorite teams and leagues. I can't wait to join you all on the app, and I'll be sure to let you know once the Locked On Pistons room is live. Download the Locker Room app today. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. Okay, and like I said, we're going to break down some of the film on Sekou and Killian. First up, I want to talk about Sekou. No duh, you guys probably guessed that. I'm big with Sekou, but Bryce, Sekou had like a really good end of the season. Before we even get into like talk about some of the film we both watched and breakdown, I believe both of us have done a couple breakdowns on Twitter over the end of his season. But let me just say this real quick before we even get there. So over his last 16 games of the season, which is right after the New York Knicks DNP when the Pistons got absolutely obliterated, but Sekou still did not play. After that, in those 16 games, he shot 55.6% on two-pointers, okay? So that's it. That's over 16-game sample. On the season, Sekou shot – actually, hold on. I don't have that up right now. Okay, so on the season, he shot 48% from two-point range. So over the last 16 games, he raised his percentage by 7%. Now, if you even go – if you take, like, just – let's go forward, like, a week and a half or so. So now we're looking at over the last 10 games – actually, no, wrong one. Hold on, let me go forward just a little bit more. My fault. Let's just go a little bit further. All right, there you go. So now if you go over the last 9 games of his season, he shot 60% from two-point range. So I think he showed, and the numbers back it up, that he was getting much more comfortable inside the three-point line. And he continued to struggle from the three-point line that weighed his overall percentage down. But if you just looked at how he was operating inside the arc, he looked like he was getting a lot more comfortable and playing a lot better. What do you think about that?
I completely agree, Koo. And this is where we connected, you know, with the Sekou talk. I think we both appreciate each other's willingness to see the middle ground on Sekou. And I always appreciate that with Sekou. I've called Sekou the most polarizing Piston because I just think the fan base is all either swayed one way or the other with him. And, you know, I try to be, you know, a little bit more down the middle. But I think he did. I really think he changed his game. I understood the frustrations during the middle of the year of people wanting him to play more minutes and get more consistent minutes. And I understand how important that is for a player. I don't think we were seeing these things from him during that time. I thought he was trying to fill a role that he definitely didn't excel at right now. Rim running, cutting, attacking the basket, those type of things. Sekou's good. Like, I've never enjoyed scouting or breaking a film down more of a guy cutting than I do of Sekou. Like, it seems like, I mean, it's a really good skill and he's really good at it. And it doesn't seem like the sexiest thing to break down, but I love it. So I do think he changed his game, his mentality a little bit, and he excelled at it. And I was excited and really happy to see it because I want to see Sekou in the long-term plan of the Detroit Pistons.
Yeah, I obviously everyone on here knows that I completely agree with that. So, I mean, I don't really got much to add to that, but we can go ahead and get right into some plays that we saw from him. So, like, there's a couple – I think one of the main things I saw from him down the stretch, and I did this – I talked about this in one of my breakdowns that I did. So, in his rookie season, I think you guys – a lot of you guys listening will remember this if you guys watched him his rookie season. One of the things the Pistons used him as, and they really didn't use him at all like this season until, like, the last, like, week and a half of the season, which is, like, really frustrating for me. But his rookie season – he said a lot, they used him as a screener a lot, and he would pop.
Yep.
And then when they would kick it back out to him, it would give him – he would either be able to shoot the three if they gave him space, or he'd be able to attack closeouts, which I made a video in the offseason grading his season. And the two things I said that he showed that he was really good at, one was cutting, and two was attacking closeouts. He's really good at seeing, like, in the video I showed, he would pump fake and he would attack the guy's inside leg, and it would make the guy open up and he immediately would get a step on him. And he's really good with that. So he started doing that over the last week and a half, but they didn't really use him like that throughout the whole season, which I think was really dumb and really frustrated me. But either way, I think one of the things I saw down the stretch was that he was getting more crafty and like more advanced with each game passing by on his finishes off these closeouts. Yeah. Like there was one play, I forget who it was against, but he drove the lane on a guy from the top of the key down the right, using his right hand, attacking the basket. And when he got like inside the paint, he stopped on a dime, gave him a pump fake with his left hand, and then spanned away the other way and finished with his left hand. And the dude just went flying. I think it was against Charlotte. Yep. I think that was the game it was against. But that right there was one of the most advanced moves I've seen Sekou do. And there was a lot of other ones too down the stretch where it's just like, these aren't just simple finishes that he was doing. Each game, it felt like he was adding a new finish to his repertoire. Like he was doing some really tough finishes. And I feel like that shows that like after, if you give him another offseason of strength and conditioning, of training, let him get stronger, let him gain more confidence, which I think he definitely had more confidence. Even he spoke about it after one of the games. He said, I know I'm going to play and I know coaches are going to keep me out there, so I'm just playing freely, which I think is like major with basketball players. I know, obviously, I never played at like a really high level, but if you're just a basketball player, if you've played your whole life, you know that like if you're getting into a game, whether you played varsity basketball, college basketball, whatever, you know that if you have your coach's confidence and the coach is letting you play freely, you just play so much better because you're not constantly looking over your shoulder. You're not scared if you mess this up, you'll be taken out the game. So I think all of that added into the reason why we're seeing so many more advanced moves from Sekou down the stretch. I kind of ranted for a really long time there. I wasn't trying to.
No, you're
good. You can go ahead and take it from there.
You're good. Everything you said was exactly right. I mean, just to touch on that point, I think that's so true with players. And it's not just on the court stuff. You know, like, you know, you move to a new city, a new country, you know, whatever, and just getting comfortable in those situations as well. So, like, just real quick, we don't have to – but, like, I came from a small town in Kansas. I play in college basketball in Washington, D.C. It took me 6 months just to get used to living in a big city, away from home, all that stuff, and that affected my confidence on the court once I got more comfortable everywhere else. And so could you imagine being an 18-, 19-year-old kid? Like, how old Sekou? I mean, like – those adjustments are hard, and then that affects on the court. But you're right. The skill level is there. The talent is there. Those moves in the lane off the drives. He had a sweet spin move in one of the breakdowns I did, like just left the defender in the dust, finished with his left hand, ISO'd a defender one time, did a shot fake up and under. The breakdown you did was beautiful. It's a set play the Pistons run where he slips the ball screen and then gets an isolation on a hard closeout. Like all that stuff is there. And so it's just great to utilize it. And I do want to say, Ku, I would like to know the numbers. Cause I feel like when his first shot of a game is a 3-pointer, he never makes it. Like he, you know, that's whenever it doesn't look good. Whenever he goes to the rim, he's attacking, slashing, cutting. And then maybe his fourth shot of a game is a 3. I feel like his 3-point shot looks a lot better.
Yeah. I definitely think that when he gets like more aggressive and he sets the tone early, he eases into the game faster. And I think that actually happened more so like the last, I don't know, like maybe I would say like 5 or 6 games of the season.
Agreed.
Like he would burst out and just have like a really good like first quarter. Like he'd jump out to like 8 points in the first like 6 minutes of the game. And then just he wouldn't really score the rest of the game, which it kind of annoyed me. Like this one game against Philly, I'm pretty sure he jumped out and had like 8 points in the first quarter. And then didn't come back into like the 2 minutes left in the second quarter, or whatever, and just like never was able to like get the same kind of looks he was getting. But that's another story for a different day. But either way, I agree with you. And it's just, I feel like he showed so many. The thing for me is, I talked about this on the podcast before he really started going off and started having a really good stretch of the season to end the year. I talked about how the things I'd seen from him was I've seen the ability that when he wanted to get to the basket, he was getting to the basket, which for me, that's bigger than, say, like his finishing at this point, because he's 20 years old. And for me, I want to see the base there. Like if you can't get to that point of being able to finish at the rim, then there's no, like, I don't care how good your touch is around the rim. If you can't get there, it's not going to matter. And what he showed was before he even started having that stretch was that when he wanted to get to the rim, he got there. And then once he gained his confidence, we started seeing more and more finishes at the rim. We started to see him get to the free throw line a lot more. He had how many games did he have? Like this last game against Minnesota, he played. He had 8 free throws. Game before that, he had 4 free throws. A couple games before that, he had 6. Another game before that, 6 free throws. So he was going to the basket. And you could probably argue that he probably got a few more foul calls that he didn't really get. But either way, he was attacking really strong. I really think that he has shown, even before, like I said, he started playing well, that he has an ability to get to the basket. It's just a matter of can he finish when he gets there. And he showed some insane – I think the best way to describe it was some footwork.
Yep.
His footwork was really, really nice when he got there. He had a lot of up and unders, a lot of spin moves, a lot of Euro steps. He knows how to – one of the things that kind of impressed me over the last few weeks, and then I'll let you go and then we can move on to someone else, but – one of the things that kind of impressed me was that he knows how to. I have a friend I hoop with all the time. He does this all the time. I hate it. I hate guarding him because he does it so much. He knows how to change speeds on the drive.
Yes.
Like he'll go full speed all the way to the paint, and as soon as he gets to the paint, he'll just completely stop and Euro step to the right or something. So the defender will just go completely flying by him, but he's still like moving just way slower than he was. And I feel like Sekou showed that a lot. He's like really aware on his drives as well. So, I don't know. I feel like there's a ton of things. Obviously, the shot has to improve. He needs to work on that. But I think he very clearly has shown a base, a foundation to work around for where he can be in this league.
And you brought this up as well. I think you did a breakdown, or at least I saw it on a tweet. Maybe I heard it whenever I was listening to a podcast. Was he, early in the year, he tried to lay one up in transition or something like that, and he got blocked. And then there was multiple games and situations where in that same situation he went up and dunked it. Like, I'm not going to get blocked, I'm going to use my athleticism, because he is an athletic player. And so he went up, so you saw that in season improvement. Like, he learned from that, like, I can't just lay it up here, that, you know, these guys in the NBA are too athletic for me to do that, I'm going to go up and dunk it. You did see the improvement, and the skill sets he have are, there are things you can do anytime. There are things that every team needs. His rim running, I love watching him run in transition. He's really good at that early post. Like, he'll post you, he'll beat everybody down the floor, get that early post position. And then with Killian Hayes and his eyes and his vision, making those passes ahead, I just love all that stuff. And like, you're right, he's only 20. So the shot can develop, the ball handling can develop, some more post game, back to the basket, all that stuff can continue to develop. I'm glad we saw these 10, 15 games here at the end of the year where we can all be really positive about his game. And I still, again, I know some people are out on this. I've heard you vent about it a little bit. I think his future is with the Pistons, though. Like, I still think there's hope for him here, and I think he's going to be a contributor.
Yeah, I mean, I hope his future's here. I seriously think I'm going to be in the minority on this. I don't think many people agree with me. But I think if I'm picking anybody's ceiling, absolute ceiling, I think Sekou has the highest ceiling out of anybody on the team. There's just so, like, I just feel like he has so much raw talent there. I know a lot of people are really high in Killian and think probably Killian has the highest ceiling. I'm not saying Sekou is the most likely to get there. I'm saying if you had to just tell me, like, to rate everybody's ceiling, sure, I think Sekou has the highest ceiling. I know it's likely he probably doesn't get there, but I just think he does. And there's, like, you even brought up his post game. There was a against Memphis, I believe it was Kyle Anderson guarding him. He had 2 post-ups against Kyle Anderson down the stretch, where he just, like, there was one where he just completely bullied him and shot over him, and then another one when he just gave him a quick spin move, sized him up, and finished at the basket. There's just so – I'm telling you, I watched this dude in the G League. A lot of us watched him in his G League his rookie year. The way he played in the G League, the way they used him in the G League, I'm telling everybody right now, it was not how they used him at all this year. They, like, the way it was night and day how they used him his rookie year and how they used him this season until, like, the final stretch. And it's I know I've talked about it a lot. I'm going to end it here because I don't want to keep ranting. I rant about this every time we talk about it. But it's seriously so – it was so frustrating for me to watch, because I went through this with Stanley Johnson. Stanley Johnson obviously was just didn't work out. Like, I'm not going to blame the coach. He never really got better. But it was the same thing I had with Stanley Johnson, where – just putting the dude in the corner isn't doing anything. And a lot of people throughout the season were like, well, he's not being aggressive, he's not really going to the rim. Well, and like, there's a reason why he's spotting him in the corner. There's sets going on. He can't just float around the perimeter while there's sets going on. He's going to, like, mess up the play. And there's a lot of times where the sets were going to operate away from Sekou. Sekou's just going to sit in the corner. And I just
So that brings up a bigger point. What do you think about this? I'm sorry, I don't mean to, like, ask a question. Come on your show and ask a question.
No, go ahead.
Like, I think we should play more in transition. I think that fits our personnel better. And don't get me wrong, I love to sit down like you and break down a set play and how it works and the ins and outs. But like with Killian Hayes, Sadiq Bey can shoot it in transition. Jeremy Grant's athletic, Sekou's athletic, Isaiah Stewart, like, can beat guys down the floor. Like, I hope we play in transition more next year. Josh Jackson, Hami. To me, sometimes that's the problem is we're not, I don't know, a lot of these guys are, their game is best suited in the half court.
No, yeah, I completely agree with that. That was something that I pointed out midway through the season. And I think the problem is that throughout the, okay, so like the first half of the season, they dealt with Blake and all these other guys who just didn't want to run. Yeah, yeah. So that, it screwed it up in the beginning of the season.
For sure.
And then the second half of the season, Dwayne Casey played Corey Joseph a lot.
Yep.
Who he's just not going to really want to run in transition. Wayne Ellington will he'll run 3-point line to 3-point line. He's not going to be running in transition. Like, he'll run to the 3-point line and stop. So he's not really trying to run in transition. But I completely agree with you. If this team's like try to run more, and a lot of times in order to run more, you can't be taking the ball off the basket to run. Like, you have to get stops as well.
For sure.
But I 100% believe that they need to work in transition more. We can talk about this a little bit more when we come back. Okay. This is something I actually point out with Killian Hayes. Right, so let me tell you guys about some of these sponsors, and then we'll come back and stay on topic there. But first, let me tell you a little bit about one of our sponsors, Built Bar. The best tasting protein bar on the planet Earth comes with a variety of flavors, including 6 new flavors and caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. All flavors are covered in incredible tasting chocolate and are soft and easy on the teeth to chew. These bars are low in calorie and sugar, but high in protein and fiber. A flavor I suggest is the peanut butter flavor. I tell you guys all the time, I absolutely love peanut butter. Packed with 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, only 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams net carbs. So go try the Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. And then let me tell you about another one of our reoccurring sponsors, BetOnline.ag. Betting is now legal in Michigan, and if you're anything like me, you want to take advantage of that instantly. However, there was one problem I constantly ran into. There's just so many different apps to bet through. Which betting app is the best to use? Which one is the best for me? That's why I found BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. The NFL season might be over, but the NBA has its playoffs coming up, and the NHL and MLB are still in full swing. If you want to take your adventures beyond sports, however, BetOnline has you covered there too. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV, things I didn't even know you could bet on. BetOnline has real-time updated odds and props on just about anything you can imagine. BetOnline is the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head over to BetOnline now to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, and make sure to use promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So like we were talking about, I'm going to pick up where Bryce was talking just now. So with the whole transition thing, I think we can kind of use this to segue into Killian Hayes' film and stuff we've seen from Killian down the stretch, is that it ties in Killian and Sekou. And it was something I wanted to say. Sekou beats his guy down the floor so many times, and there's so many times where he gets down the floor and gets like that post-up like we were talking about. He'll seal his defender off. He'll get like a guard who's getting back in transition first. He'll seal him off underneath the basket and get like that attention on him. And I feel like that if the Pistons were to run in transition more and just try to like make it an emphasis to score in transition, not in the half court, there's two things that can come of this. And I think I really hope they do this next year. If Sekou's still on the team, which I pray he is, but I'm not going to put it past that he's not. But if he is, this is something I really wish they take advantage of. So, one, if you get it to Sekou early and you get it to him as soon as he seals off, Sekou's likely going to get a bucket or get fouled. So I think that can add a lot of easy points for the team and Sekou. But then, two, one of the things that people miss is that, and people don't really understand, is that if Sekou is running down the floor and the team is pushing in transition – and he gets that guard on him, who's the first one back usually off a missed shot. If Sekou gets that guy sealed off, that draws the defense in immediately. That defense is automatically getting sucked in because there's a mismatch underneath the rim. So now all the attention is on Sekou, and if you run in transition, you not only just have to give it to Sekou, there's going to be guys open all over the place because the defense is going to be like, oh crap, we have a 6'9 guy being guarded by a 6'2 guard. We have to try cover for this. We're scrambling on defense. And Killian Hayes, I think, is going to work. If they used him more like that and try to put more of an emphasis on transition, I feel like it was going to fit Killian's game to a T. because he has such great passing vision, such great IQ, that I think he can pick apart a defense that's scrambling, especially if you're teaming him up with a guy like Sekou who's going to force the mismatch, force the defense to suck into the paint and create that gravity for you. I think them two right there can really put an emphasis on transition points and make some easy buckets for the Pistons next year.
Absolutely. And there's some, you know, there was highlights of it this year where they're running together, Sekou rim runs, Hayes drops it off. And the exact scenario you talk about played out in one of the breakdowns I did. It was actually Isaiah Stewart ran the floor. I think it was against the Magic, because I think it was Gary Harris. And he got Gary Harris pinned underneath the basket. And Hami came down, and the big that was supposed to be guarding Stewart didn't know who he was supposed to guard. You know, it's like you get all those cross matches, you know, a big on a guard and people don't know who they are. They're in scramble mode. And so I think that's a huge part of it. So you're right. Sekou scoring, but also causing those mismatches and help and the defense in scramble mode is huge. But for Killian Hayes, I think that's where he's most comfortable. I think that and pick and roll. And we knew about the pick and roll. That was his rep coming in, was he was a really good pick and roll player, and that's where he's most comfortable. I'm sure we'll talk about the isolation stuff, but that's why I like the transition as well. It inherently gives him an advantage if he's pushing the ball in transition. There's not a set defense, probably going to be more spacing, especially where we lack shooters right now. Hopefully that changes going into next year. Spacing can be an issue at times. So when the defense is scrambled like that, it gives Hayes those lanes to attack. And then, like you said, his vision is so good, and he does such a good job finding his teammates.
So, yeah, I completely agree. So we're going to use that to segue into Killian Hayes' comeback. Like, what was the last couple of games? He played, what, 20? How many games did Killian play when he came back? Like 20? I think it was 20 games he played when he returned.
I have it right here. Killian Hayes, 26. He played 19. Because he played 19 games. Yeah, he played 17 before the injury. He played 19.
Okay, so he played 19 games coming back from injury. Just give me your overall thoughts. We can get more in-depth on it, but give me your overall thoughts of what you thought about Killian in that second half of the season and also compared to what he looked like at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I was nervous, to be honest with you, Koo. Like, those first seven games had me a little bit worried. I came in with really high expectations, probably too high expectations, and that was probably why. I didn't love what I saw from him in those first seven games. I wasn't like, the ship wasn't sinking, but I was a little nervous about it. And then when he came back from injury, I thought he looked really good. I don't think people can overlook what sitting on the sideline at practice during games, that extra film sessions and all those things can do for a player, especially a young player. I think he learned a lot while he was setting out, and the game could slow down for him even while he was setting out, not actually playing in games. I liked what I saw. If I had one critique of him, I don't know if we want to go into that right off the bat, but he's got to get more aggressive looking to score the ball. I think it's easier to drive to score and then make a pass than it is the other way. And I thought at times he got himself in trouble because he drove to pass the ball, not to score it.
Yeah, so we can go ahead, since you brought it, we can go straight into that. So I think we can talk about some of his positives and some of his negatives, but we'll go straight into his negatives. The big thing that I, like you said, the big thing for me with Killian was the fact that, like you said, he would get caught looking to pass before shooting, and that would be like lead to a lot of his turnovers, a lot of his unorthodox floaters. In that game, he scored 21 points. I feel like it kind of clicked for him in that game. Like, hey, if I come off the screen trying to score, that is going to eventually create more passing lanes for me to dish off the people, and it's going to make me harder to guard. I think one of the, along with just being more aggressive, if you want to get more like in depth about it, the thing for me was that it was really frustrating for me to watch, to be honest. It probably by far the most frustrating to see for me. And it's kind of like a good thing, bad thing reason for me to be so frustrated, is because Killian so many times, like this, I had Dialed in Detroit on here. Everyone remembers like the big drama that happened with them and their opinions and what got caused. So I had him on here. We kind of talked about, I gave him their chance to talk about it. But I kind of hit on it then. The biggest thing with Killian that to be honest, pissed me off so much watching him was he has such a like unique and creative handle, and he would just get like, he would get dudes and like in and outs and crossovers, and he'll string together a good crossover between the leg behind the back, and he would get himself advantages on defenders. Like defenders would be left in the dust, or he'll get a step on them. and then he'd just retreat. He would never take advantage of this. Like he'd create himself an advantage and then never take advantage of it. And I feel like he just made himself, like, made life tougher on himself because he just wouldn't take advantage of the advantages he created for himself. What do you think about that?
So cool. Like, literally, as you're talking about that, and I agree with you, because I do think there's time he struggles to go by in isolations, but there's plenty of clips where he is able to. And you're right. He has a unique handle. He's able to move defenders and get those advantages. But as you were talking about that, I literally, like, to me, that's to a lot of today's players. Like, that's who these kids I work with in high school, because it's so much individual workouts, and they see these highlights where the defender gets dropped. And, like, so that's what they do. Like, they just want to make the guy, put the guy on skates, and then they stand there and look at him, you know? So, like, in some ways, that's how these kids play now. And I'm not saying that's Killian, but I think there's a little bit of that in his game where it's like, no, like, you make that move to now explode, go by, get into lane, put the, you know, the little floater, drop off to Stewart, kick out to Sadiq Bey, whatever it is. So I think you could see a lot of that with players coming up now, is that for whatever reason, they tend to do that a lot. They have the wiggle, they have the handles, but then they don't understand how to use that to then go by their defender and get an advantage.
Yeah, exactly. So but on the other hand, which is why I said it's kind of like a good thing, bad thing, is that I would much rather have it to where, like, my player is doing that, but then not taking advantage, than a guy who can't do those moves, and then that's why he's struggling to get
it. It's way easier to teach the second part than it is to teach somebody the first part. You're exactly right.
Yes, precisely. So, like, I always use, this is one of the main examples I like to use. It was the game against Chicago. There was many times where Killian would be out in transition, like we talked about, and he'd be looking to pass. Like, he would get past half court, and then he'd just be like, his eyes would be all over the place. Like, he's looking for somewhere else instead of putting pressure on the rim. Against this one play against Chicago, he crossed half court. He gave, I believe, I always forget who the main defender was, but he gave whoever his main defender was, like, an in and out, and completely exploded on it. I hadn't seen him up until that point get that explosive. He exploded past him and went all the way to the rim and finished with a nice left-hand layup over Vucevic. That right there is probably one of the best plays I've seen from him attacking the rim. Also, another one was the move he put on D'Angelo Russell at the top of the key.
Against
Minnesota. But the thing is with Kieran, like I said, it's just I would rather have, like you said, have to teach the second part than the first part. And I think that is, while it was frustrating to watch his rookie season, that's why people should be a little, like, more optimistic about his future.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's all there for Killian. Like you said earlier, I think he probably has the highest upside. I would agree with that. Other than maybe Sekou, I don't disagree with that as well. So it's there for Killian. And I think it's just a matter of figuring out when to be aggressive, when to look to score, when to get teammates involved. But I also think we got to put the right guys around him. Like, if he's going to be our floor general, and I think, I'm sure we don't want to get into this right now because it'll take us down a complete rabbit hole, but depending on who we draft, if he's our primary ball handler for the next 10 years, we got to put the right guys around him. So you got to get him pick and roll guys that are going to play with him, or pick and pop guys, and you got to put shooters around him. Because if you do that, you put a pick and roll guy and three shooters around him, or two shooters and a great cutter like Sekou, he's going to work defenses over. You know, and he may only get 12, 15 points, but he might get 10, 15 assists. And I'm not saying every night, but you know what I mean? It's like he can – the first half of the Orlando game, go back and watch that. Not you, but, you know, for listeners – he was the maestro of the offense that game. He had complete control, was getting wherever he wanted, getting whoever he wanted shots, and it was just beautiful. And to me, that's who Killian Hayes can be.
So I'm glad you brought that up. This is something I wanted to point out on the podcast, and I just hadn't done it yet. But you brought it up, and I thank you for doing it. But it was kind of hard for me to, like, give accurate – outside of Sekou, I think Sekou, outside of whoever he played with, he needed to show that he was going to be aggressive and get to the rim, and he did that. He would have been able to do that with any lineup. But down the stretch, it was really hard for me to, like, accurately analyze Killian in some of these games.
For sure.
Because it was quite obvious that we were tanking. Like, it was very obvious that we were trying to lose as many games and make sure we secured the second odds. So while doing that, like you mentioned, like, the lineups that he was played with, I'll just leave it at, the lineups he was played with was definitely not helpful for him. That's all I'll leave.
Absolutely.
Like, there was a lot of lineups. There was a lot of lineups where he got put out there with, it would be him, Okafor, Tyler Cook, Hamidou. and it was just like, and Josh Jackson or something. And it's just like, where do you expect the shooting to come from? Where do you expect like the defenders to like not sag in? Like, where is this going to happen at? And especially for a guy like Killian, who we're talking about is right now learning to be aggressive and learning to look to score. If defenders are just swarming and swiping down to him everywhere, and there's just like nowhere to really go, it's going to make it really tough on him. And I feel like a lot of times, especially in like the last three or four games, I feel like there was times where he was put out there with lineups that just weren't conducive to his skill set. But the team needed to lose, obviously. I get it. It's just, I don't know if like it was just tough to analyze those minutes, because it's like, well, you know, he's struggling, but I just don't know what we really expected from him with this lineup.
Absolutely. That's so true. It's funny you bring that up, because I was working on a little project looking at Jeremy Grant and Hayes and some other guys, like some season long player reviews. I would love to know the actual minutes played between Killian Hayes and Jeremy Grant, how much they were on the floor together outside of those first seven games of the season, because Grant set a lot of games here late in the season. Hayes was kind of, you know, for a while wasn't playing back-to-backs and all that. Like, I just wonder how much they were on the floor together this year. And so you're talking about Hayes doing all this. Like, again, if you put Stewart pick and roll, Bay and Grant, and Sekou as an off-ball cutter, all of a sudden things open up a lot for him because of floor spacing, shooting, great cutters. But if you have some of the lineups like you talked about, it doesn't matter if you can break your man down and go by or not. If there's three guys waiting for you in the lane and the guys you kick to can't make the shot, it doesn't really matter. So you're right. It was hard to analyze a lot of these players at the end of the year because the lineups and the chemistry, you could tell, just wasn't there.
Yeah, obviously. So it is what it is. But like I said, actually, you know what? Let's pivot somewhere else. Tell me what you thought about Killian Hayes, the defensive side of the ball. What did you think about him on that side?
Yeah, so this might be something that Pistons fans this might be a take that Pistons fans don't like. I call Killian Hayes a defensive disruptor. So what I think Hayes is defensively is I think he's going to get steals. On the ball, he's super aggressive. He can play in passing lanes. I think he's a disruptor. I don't know that he's a lockdown defender, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think you put him on whoever the other team's best scorer and just say, lock him up tonight, hold him to 5 points less than his average or 8 points less than his average. I don't see that in his game right now. Maybe he'll develop that defensively. But right now, I just see more of him as a guy that can disrupt the other team's game plan in terms of, I can shoot this passing lane, I can get aggressive on the ball, get a steal here and there, and use my length to do that.
Yeah, I think Jeremy, actually, you know what? Thank you for talking right there, because I actually was looking for what you said about how many minutes that Jeremy Grant and Killian Hayes actually played together since he came back. So right here, it says they've only played since Killian came back on April 3rd. They played a total of 5 games together on an average of 8.3 minutes a game.
Wow. So 40 some minutes since the injury. That's crazy.
Yeah, and I think obviously like a lot of that was due to Jeremy Grant just being sat because of the tank. So, yeah. I mean, I think obviously like I saw someone say this on Twitter, and like a lot of people just like gloss over this, and some people look at it as like, oh, well, if that's the case, then he's not really that good. No, like players need to be played with other good players. Yes. Like they're going to look better when they have good players around them. Surrounding Killian Hayes with, I don't want to call them trash cans, but people who can't shoot at all, it's not going to help for him. So like if you play him with Jeremy Grant, Sekou, and let's say Mason Plumlee, I guess, and then Sadiq Bey or something like that, he's probably going to look better because he got good players around him. And he didn't get, or at least Jeremy. And the fact that he didn't get to play really at all with Jeremy is kind of crazy. And I'm going to be looking forward to that next year. That definitely is going to be like,
yeah,
go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I think in general that there's some players that would break that trend of when they have worse players around them because they're just so ball dominant or whatever. But I mean, I do think you're right. I think the narrative that he should be able to do it without those guys is crazy. Good players usually always are going to look even better when you put other good players around them. All the greats had other good players around them, and it probably elevated their game even more. So there's probably a few examples I'm sure people can throw at us that say, oh, well, this guy was better whenever they weren't there, and that's fine. But Killian Hayes is definitely, his play style is going to be conducive to having good players around him, and especially, I think, good shooters and good pick and roll bigs.
All right, well, since we just talked about this, let me go ahead and throw a little trivia at you with real quick. Uh-oh. I just found this. I'm just going to throw you a little trivia here. Since Killian Hayes came back on April 3rd, who did he play the most minutes with? Take a guess.
Sekou?
Nope.
Hami? Isaiah Stewart.
So Isaiah Stewart is second.
Who's one?
Saddiq Bey. Him and Saddiq played 21.4 minutes a game in 18 games.
Okay. I guess that takes away my point just a little bit.
Him and so Killian played with Isaiah Saddiq Bey 21.4 minutes in those 18 games. Second is Isaiah Stewart, 20.8 minutes a game. And then you'd have to go all the way down. Let me see if I can even find it. Oh, yeah. So then Sekou is third. Sekou would then come in at 17.1 minutes a game. So,
well, and so and they, actually, they were starting. Hayes, I was just going to say, Hayes was starting there whenever he was coming here towards the end of the year. So I guess that makes sense. Like him and Bay would get quite a few minutes to start the game and start the second half. So.
And now I'll throw another trivia at you. I'm going to throw a couple of these at you because this is actually fun. I see a couple of things here I want to talk about. So, all right. So out of those, let's say 1, 2, 3, then there's Hami that he played with. And then also who else down here? Josh. So of all those five lineups that Killian Hayes, those five duos, who do you think he had the best net rating with?
Isaiah Stewart.
Nope.
Hami?
Nope.
Who else do we? JJ?
Nope. Sekou Doumbouya. Him and Sekou had the best net
rating
of
connection,
baby. Any duo.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Him and Sekou were a minus 0.9 while they were on the court. Him and Saddiq were a minus 3.6. Him and Isaiah Stewart were a minus 2.6, which obviously I think would have to do with the fact that they started a lot of games together, and so they played against starters and played more minutes. So that kind of weighs it down. But I mean, that also speaks to our point about Killian Hayes and Sekou on the court together, running in transition. So, like, look at this. When they were on the court together, the Pistons shot 47.3% from the floor, 39.4% from deep. They scored 36 points in those 17.1 minutes a game. So, I mean, they just played overall pretty well with those two on the court. So, yeah. All I'm saying is that, hey, maybe we should see even more Sekou Killian next year. That's all I'm going
to
say.
And I guess that's to my point as well, Koo, is put the right guys around him. Like, I think Killian Hayes is good enough he's not going to be a great scorer, but like I think he does all those intangible things, gets his teammate. If you put the right guys around him, he can be the engine of the offense. You can't just put random dudes. Like I think you have to do it strategically, and I think Sekou is one of those guys. So you're right, that does make sense. A guy that runs the floor, cuts real well, you know, and then you know Saddiq Bey shoots it well. Isaiah Stewart can run pick and roll, so I think it makes sense if you put the right guys around him.
Okay, so I think that might be it. Oh, actually, there's one thing I want to throw at you before we end the podcast. It's a real quick answer, yes or no, because we're running pretty long here. So let me just throw this at you. So Killian, I think, needs a lob threat as his pick-and-roll partner. I think he needs someone who can go up and catch a bunch of different unorthodox passes and can get really up. Isaiah Stewart, him and Isaiah Stewart connected on a few lobs. But let me ask you, do you think Isaiah Stewart can be a long-term pick and roll partner with Killian, like moving into the future, or do you think there's probably someone better used in that scenario? Yes or no?
Yes, there's somebody better because Stewart doesn't have the athleticism as much. He's not that high flyer that you're talking about, and I agree with you. So I think yes, I wouldn't mind seeing a different guy that can do those types of things with him.
I would also like to point out that you guys get mad at me every time I say this, but along with the athleticism worries, I'm telling you guys right now, Isaiah Stewart, seriously, loud. He's been fantastic his rookie year, but his hands are really worrying me. He fumbled a ton of passes this year and dropped a lot of catches. I will see if it gets better, but I think that also weighs down the potential of a Killian Isaiah Stewart main pick and roll moving forward. I think he needs someone who can get a little bit more athletic and catch a lot of different lobs from different areas on these passes. But
100%.
I guess we'll end it right there. Thank you, Bryce, for coming on. Make sure you guys go check him out on Twitter at Motor City Hoops on Twitter. Like I said, he does a ton of these film breakdowns. He's really dope with it. He played D1 basketball. So this dude knows what he's talking about. He's not one of those dudes who like, you know, you guys know I always talk about how I hoop and I'm a hooper for real. So you guys can't mess with me. But this dude played D1 basketball. So he's not one of those guys on there that like, oh, did you even play basketball, bro? Now, this dude probably is going to go out there and destroy you if you want to say something to him. So he knows what he's talking about. Thank you. Thank you, Bryce, for coming on.
Thanks for having me, man. I had a blast, man. I appreciate it.
Yep. So I'll catch you guys in the next podcast. Like I said, we have another guest coming later on this week. One of the beat writers. I'm not telling you who it is, but be tuned for that. But until then, I'll see you guys later. Peace out, everybody.